I suppose of all of the Old Testament characters that we can study in the Bible, Daniel is perhaps one of the best known. I realize there are many others, such as Moses and David and Solomon, but of all those great Old Testament characters that could be studied, I think Daniel would be one of the best known. And certainly the faith of Daniel as a very young man has served as an inspiration, if you will, to young people of many generations. You recall that earlier in chapter 1, the book of Daniel, we find that he and some other Jewish young men were taken captive into to Babylon. It's generally believed that he was a young man in his mid-teens, although it can't be proven, and we're not going to go into the reasons why that's believed. But the text that was read there, verse 8, notices a very young man a long way from home in a situation where it would have been very easy to go along, to go with the crowd, as we would say. Daniel, we're told, purposed in his heart. Daniel refused to partake of the food, the wine, and the things that as a Hebrew he was forbidden to partake of. And so he spoke up, he stood up, he said, I can't eat that stuff, I don't drink that, and he requested something else. And of course God was with Daniel, he blessed him with good health, and he went on to become a great leader in the kingdom. But not only is Daniel an inspiration to young people, Daniel is an inspiration to older Christians as well. What a great example of service and commitment to those in the golden years of life. We have examples of Daniel as an older man, perhaps in his mid to late 80s in life. Now bear in mind that according to Daniel 10 and verse 1, Daniel had lived through the entire 70-year of captivity of the children of God. He lived on to the third year, at least the third year of the reign of Cyrus, the king of Persia. And so when you couple all these numbers together, Daniel was obviously at the close of his life in his mid to late 80s. It's generally believed that Daniel never returned to his homeland, that he died in the land of captivity as a child of God. But the account of Daniel's faith as an older man is recorded in Daniel chapter 6, if you want to be turning there, verses 1 through 26. And here we find a story that I think we all know by heart. In fact, every youngster here, if I asked them, could relate this story in some detail. We usually refer to it as Daniel in the lion's den. And certainly the story of Daniel in the lion's den is one that is worthy of our consideration. And so I want to take these verses in Daniel chapter 6, going to read several verses at a time, and then make some applications from the things we learn that Daniel did in this context. In the first 9 verses, though, of Daniel 6, we find that a trap is set for Daniel by his enemies. Notice, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. And I think this next phrase is profound. But they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom and the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius, sign the writing and the decree. Now notice, first of all, we find that Daniel here, even though he's a captive in a foreign land, he is successful as a career man. He has been appointed as one of the 3 governors over the kingdom of Persia, as we see in the first 2 verses. Now the kingdom is the Babylonian, also known as the Chaldean kingdom. that has recently been conquered by the Medo-Persians. So while he started out as a prisoner of Babylon, that's all changed because the Babylonians have been conquered, and now they are in captivity to the Medes and the Persians. As we see in verse 30 and 31, we read about what happened. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So here's the transition of power. Here's the transition of the governments, if you will, the conquerors. Now, history tells us virtually nothing about this king, Darius the Mede, except that he was appointed by Cyrus of Persia to rule in this area of Chaldea. But look at verse 3. Daniel clearly distinguished himself above the others. And we're not told a lot of particulars, a lot of details, how he distinguished himself. But notice his success, according to the middle part of verse 3, was due to his having an excellent spirit. Daniel was not cunning. He wasn't working under the scenes politically, as we would say, maneuvering to get ahead. But he was simply honest. He did his work. And just as a side note, I might mention here that Daniel is proof that we can be successful in business and whatever we set out to do. We don't have to lower our standards. We don't have to be like those about us to excel or to get ahead. Daniel is proof of this. Daniel was what we might say very efficient. He was very trustworthy. And we're told that the king here contemplated putting Daniel over all of the whole realm there. Also, verse 3. So that says a lot about it. Here's this Jewish captive who is considered to be placed above all of the other rulers there in the kingdom. Again, this says a lot about his integrity and his honesty. But you know, with success comes envy. If you're successful in your business, there are people who are going to be jealous. If you're successful on your job where you work, there are people who are going to be jealous. And that's the case we have with Daniel here. His enemies didn't like it because he was getting ahead. And you know, this just goes to show that even though you're a godly person, which Daniel was, even as a godly person, you're going to have enemies. You're going to have people who don't like you. You're going to have people that are jealous of you. And as I say, these men became jealous of Daniel, not because of what he was doing wrong, not because he cheated or was dishonest or did things to them. They were jealous. They were envious of him because he succeeded and because of his virtue. But you know, it's interesting. Even his enemies attested to his goodness. His enemies couldn't find anything bad. They couldn't say, well, you know, he's stealing from the king. They couldn't say he's lazy, he's not carrying his load, he's doing his work, not doing his work. They couldn't say, well, you know, you can't trust old Daniel, he will lie to you and he'll steal from you. No, they had to admit that he was an honest man. Notice verse 4, then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel. In other words, they wanted something to use against him concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as, notice, he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Now there's a compliment, brethren. Could they say that of us on the job or at school? We can't find any fault in him. He's faithful. There's no error found in him. But that's the way this man Daniel was remembered. And so they couldn't find any charge they could make stick. They couldn't find an allegation that they could use against Daniel because he was, as we see here, a faithful, trustworthy man. His enemies got their heads together, though, and notice they came up with the idea. Look, the only way we're going to get Daniel, the only way we're going to find something against him is going to be in his religion. There's got to be some conflict between his religious activities and his loyalty to the kingdom. Notice verse 5. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Now this tells me something. These enemies, they weren't Hebrews. They may have been Babylonians who had carried over into office. They may have been Medes. They may have been Persians. And by the way, this may have been part of the jealousy. Because here's this foreigner, here's this Hebrew, Daniel, who's not even one of us. You know, they dress funny. They don't talk like us. They don't look like us. What's he doing getting promoted? It ought to be one of us. It ought to be a Persian who's put over the realm. It ought to be one of the Medes instead of this Jew over here. We're not told that's what was said, but you can well imagine prejudice is almost as old as man, isn't it? People have always been prejudiced to people who are different. The way they talk, the way they dress, the way they worship. And maybe that was part of the reason behind this jealousy. You know, well, why is he getting promoted? We're as smart as he is. So anyway, they determined the only way we're going to get to Daniel is through his religion. And so they set out to find a way they can do it. They come up with the idea of this new law, this new edict. Chapter 6 and verse 6, they go to the king. And they propose a royal statute, it's called, or statute, or a firm decree. And this decree simply said that for 30 days, nobody could make a request, nobody could petition, nobody could pray to any god or any man. Except, of course, the king. And the king is persuaded to sign this thing, and perhaps it seemed harmless enough to him. And I'm sure it appealed to his vanity. Hey, nobody can ask anybody for anything except me. Nobody can pray to their God. They've got to pray to me. Maybe that was part of the reason he signed this decree. We're not told. And keep this in mind. It's mentioned here that the law of the Medes and the Persians, once a law was signed, once a decree was made, it couldn't be altered. It couldn't be changed. We run into this in the book of Esther, remember? Haman had signed the decree with the king's stamp calling for the execution of all the Jews. And when his plot was revealed and Esther begged the king to do something, he said, I can't do it. It's in law, and the law of the Medes and the Persians. It can't be altered. So that was the situation here. Even the king couldn't change this law once it's been signed. King Darius signs the decree without even realizing the motive behind it. If he had, he wouldn't have signed it based upon what happens later in the chapter. But keep in mind, Daniel's faith has brought him success up until this point. But now the exercise of his faith could cause him not only to lose his job, the practice of his faith could cause him even to lose his life. What would you have done in this point? What if you were told tonight, tomorrow, if you pray, we're going to throw you into a den of lions. If you pray, we're going to behead you. Would you pray? Would you say, well, I'll pray quietly, I'll pray secretly. You know, they don't have to know, God can hear me. That's not what Daniel did. We see the character of Daniel. We see the faith of Daniel and the way that he reacted. I don't know how he learned. We're not told in the text here. Perhaps a proclamation was made. Perhaps it was hung on the walls, you know, signpost as we would call them today, for people to read. But Daniel knew about the proclamation, as we see a little bit later. But notice verses 10 through 17. The trap is sprung, we could say. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house. And his windows being open, and that's important, his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did before. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. And notice their sneakiness. Maybe that's not good grammar. They were sneaky here. They asked the king as though they don't know, hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? They knew exactly that he had signed it. They were the ones that had prompted him to sign it. And so this is what we might call a fishing expedition. They're setting Daniel up. The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. And then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, notice what they call him, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. We would say he was angry with himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords. Now that, I think, is significant. Sealed it with his own signet, with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Now, obviously, we see Daniel here continuing to pray. Even though he knows about the decree, even though he understands the implications of what's going to happen, if he continues to pray, as we see in verse 10, and notice he follows the Jewish custom of prayer. He prays three times a day. David talks about this in Psalm 55, 17. Evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. Notice Daniel prays toward Jerusalem through an open window, just as Solomon had done at the dedication of the temple. 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 27 through 30. And let me clarify that. Solomon didn't pray through an open window toward Jerusalem, but he prayed toward Jerusalem at the dedication of the temple. So here's Daniel praying at an open window facing Jerusalem as the Jews did. And he prays with thankfulness to God, even though he's in difficult times. He gives thanks to God for his blessings. And it would seem that this had been Daniel's practice based on verse 10 for some time to pray regularly, to pray daily. Even though Daniel was an older man at this point, he'd not grown weary in prayer to God. Even though he was an older child of God, he understood the importance of communicating with his heavenly Father. And of course, we know what happened. Daniel was caught. You can well imagine his enemies knew that he was going to continue praying, or at least they were sure he would. He was a man of character, a man of honor. And so maybe they stood outside the window. Maybe they stood close enough they could see him kneeling inside that window, or maybe they could hear his voice. We're not told. But the point is, Daniel made no attempt. He makes no effort to hide. Now, what would we have done? Shut the windows. Draw the blinds. Let's pray. He continues to pray the way he's always prayed, there at the open window, and presumably praying out loud as the Jews did. And of course, his enemies, they waste no time running to the king. And, oh, king, didn't you sign a decree forbidding this? Well, yeah. Well, that Daniel, that Hebrew, he's violating your law. And the king is forced to abide by his own decree. And notice, I think it's interesting, that they go so far as to accuse Daniel of disregarding the king, of disregarding your decree. No, it wasn't the king's decree. He was duped into signing it. And Daniel's praying had nothing to do with the king, because his first obligation, his loyalty, was to God and to doing what God would have him to do. But as I say, the king did his best to deliver Daniel. Notice verse 14, starting in the middle of the verse. It says, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And then it goes on to say, he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. And you can imagine all the while, these enemies of the king are saying, okay, when are you going to do it? King, you got to put him in the lion's den. You signed the law. He's got to be punished. And so at sundown, Daniel is thrown into the lion's den, according to verse 16. But it's interesting. Here's the king. Remember, the king is not a worshiper of Jehovah God. He would be a pagan if he's religious at all. But yet here the king is hopeful in verse 16 that Daniel's God will be able to deliver him. And he talks about the fact that Daniel had served his God continually. We would say he served him faithfully. Now let me ask you something. Would the king have been this optimistic? Would the king have had this kind of faith had Daniel been, for lack of a better term, sporadic in his service to God? What if Daniel only prayed, every few days or so, now and again he'd say a prayer, worship God sometimes? Would the king have been as optimistic, you think? Verse 17, Daniel's put in the lion's den. A stone is rolled over the opening, the hole. Not only to keep the lions in, but I guess to keep Daniel in. There was a seal placed on the stone where the stones came together. And it's interesting because the text says it was sealed with the signet ring of the king as well as the signet of his lords. Now, obviously, they wanted to make sure that their idea for Daniel, their plan for Daniel, wasn't foiled. It wasn't changed. And really, if you think, and I'd never thought about this till I was studying this text for this lesson, it would seem these advisors don't trust the king. I mean, would you want to be the one to tell the king who has sealed this doorway with his signet ring, which, by the way, was punishable by death for anybody who violated that seal? But would you want to be the one to say, well, look, king, if you don't mind, we want to put our seal on there? If I'd been the king, I think I'd say, what, you don't trust me? I would have been telling him, hey, there's more room in that den. You know, there's enough lions to go around. But they were brazen enough to insist on putting their seal on the stone as well. At this point, it seems all is lost, doesn't it? Daniel's enemies have won. They've gotten rid of Daniel, the man they detested. He's in the lion's den. It's sealed. There's no way out. And yet I ask you, could any seal of man keep God from accomplishing his plans? Think of another stone that was sealed many years later in the book of Matthew. When Jesus' body was laid in that tomb, there was a Roman seal affixed on that door to guarantee that nobody went in. I started to say nobody went in or came out, but nobody was coming out anyway normally. But there was a seal put on there that said, if you break this seal, you're going to die. Roman soldiers were put outside the door to guard the tomb, but what happened? Jesus still came forth, seal or no seal. We're going to see in just a minute that Daniel comes forth with or without a seal. But the story gets good beginning in verse 18. Things go wrong for Daniel's enemies here. They're trapped. Well, it just doesn't hold up very well. Let's read verse 18 and following. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste into the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. We'd say with a sad voice. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me and also before thee. O king, have I done no hurt? Then was the king exceeding glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den and no manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, their wives. And the lions had mastery of them and broke all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. And his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. And his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth. Who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and the king of Cyrus the Persian. Don't you find it interesting that the king is worried about Daniel? He spends a restless night. It seems he can't sleep from verse 18. He spends the night fasting. You know, he doesn't have a midnight snack, as we would say. He doesn't call for his musicians. And this refers to the custom when the king or other wealthy people couldn't sleep. They would have musicians come in and play soothing music to them to help them sleep. But he doesn't do that. He spends the night fasting and worrying and concern for Daniel. Verse 19 and 20, his concern for Daniel is evident. Next morning, bright and early, he gets up and hurries out to the lion's den. And again, I find it interesting. You know, a king usually sends a servant to do his bidding. Hey, go check on Daniel. Go out there and see if the lions have killed him. No. He doesn't send somebody else to do it. He goes out to the tomb himself, and it would seem that others went with him. Usually the king had an entourage wherever he went, but he went personally. And as he gets there, he cries out to Daniel with this sad voice. He wants to know, Daniel, did your God deliver you? He calls him a servant of the living God. He says, you serve your God continually. Was your God able to save you? And of course, God had. Daniel answers the king in verse 21 and 22, and notice the respect. You know, if somebody had thrown me in a den of lions and I'd made it through the night alive, I don't think I would be in a real good mood with them. I don't think I'd be trying to curry favor, but listen to what he says there. O king, live forever. You know, we'd probably be saying, I hope you rot. I hope you stumble and fall in the door with me. But no, Daniel is totally respectful in spite of what the king has done to him. Daniel is actually returning good for evil, blessing for cursing. And he answers with regard to what God has done for him. He says he's been saved by the angel of God. And notice he said the angel had shut the mouth of the lions. Now, whether that's meant literally or metaphorically, I don't know. It doesn't matter as long as you didn't get eaten by the lion. The angel had spared his life. But notice something else. Daniel affirms his innocence here. His innocence not only before God, but in essence he says, I haven't done anything to you, O king. And the king knew this was true. But Daniel affirms his innocence here. And of course the king immediately has Daniel removed from the lion's den in verse 23. And it's touching because it says the king was very glad. Or as the King James says, exceedingly glad. Because here's Daniel. He's not even scratched. He hadn't even had a tussle with these lions. But why was Daniel delivered? Have you ever paused to ask that question? Why was Daniel spared from these lions? I think we can say it was because of his faith in God. It was because of his faith in God. He was determined to do what was right, to do what God wanted, no matter what the consequences. And God was with him. God is making a point. And in verse 24, the king commands that those conspirators who had plotted against Daniel, that they be thrown into the same lion's den that Daniel had been in, along with their wives and their children. And you know, a lot of times that happens when we set traps for others. Don't we often get caught in them ourselves? When we plot against others to get even with them or to hurt them, doesn't that often backfire? And that's exactly what happens here. I'm reminded of Haman in the book of Esther, chapter 7 and verse 10. Remember, Haman had built these gallows to hang Mordecai on to get rid of him? And at the end of the story, who's hanging on the gallows? It wasn't Mordecai. Haman was hanged on his own gallows. His trap backfired too. David wrote about this very thing in Psalm 7, beginning in verse 14. Behold, he travaileth with iniquity and hath conceived mischief and brought forth falsehood. He made a pit and digged it and has fallen to the ditch which he made. His mischief shall return upon his own head and his violent dealings shall come down upon his own head. David said the same thing as what's happening here. He said, you dig a pit for others, you fall into it. What you plan for others comes back on you. A loose paraphrase there. And you know, ultimately, God is glorified in this. It's not just a matter of Daniel praying. It's not just a matter of Daniel being spared from being devoured by the lions. Because ultimately God is glorified here. The king makes a decree that the God of Daniel be feared. And we're not going to read those verses again, but verses 25, 26, and 27, the king exalts the God of Daniel. He realizes that he is the living God. He's indestructible, and he speaks of his kingdom lasting forever. So here's another pagan king who comes to realize who is really in control. Now, if you want to go back a couple of chapters to Daniel 4, beginning in verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar learned this lesson, didn't he? Now, granted, he had to learn the hard way. He had to live like an animal, eating grass and living outside in the cold and the rain. But he learned, and when God restored him to his manhood, he acknowledged that God was in control. In chapter 5, Belshazzar came to learn who was in control, but sadly for Belshazzar, it was too late because he was conquered by the Medes and the Persians and he was killed. But he acknowledged God before he died. Of course, the story continues. Daniel prospers in the reign of Darius, but he also went on to prosper in the reign of Cyrus. Why? How do we account for a foreigner, conquered foreigner, living in a strange land, being so successful? Because he was a godly man. Because he did what was right. We can't say, well, you know, it was who he knew. You know, he had inside. No, he didn't have inside connections. He was an outsider. But he was an outsider that was determined to do right. Just quickly in closing, as we look at Daniel, we see so many noble qualities in this man. He had an excellent spirit. He was without fault in his business dealings. He was faithful to those above him who served him or served over him. He was a man of prayer. He was willing to obey God rather than man. To put it simply, he was a man who truly believed in God and was willing to pay the price, regardless of what that price might be. You know, the story of Daniel in the lion's den has thrilled many a youngster over the years. But as I said in the introduction, the lessons from this story are not just for children, although it's applicable. There are many lessons for mom and dad, many lessons for adult Christians as well. What a role model he is for all of us. May we learn from the example of Daniel, as a man who is determined to seek the kingdom of God first. Not the same way that we are to seek the kingdom first, according to Matthew 6 and 33, but in principle the same way. He sought God and the kingdom first, and he was rewarded for it. We're going to close our lesson now at this point. We extend the invitation of Christ. If you're not a Christian, you can become one. Coming in faith, repenting and turning from your sins, confessing his name and being baptized, or as a wayward Christian coming back and making things right. If you need to respond to heaven's invitation, let me encourage you to come while we stand and while we sing.